Hello, lovely podcast people. This is another intro to the second half of my guest appearance. So, I won't bore you with too many details, but Jeff and I discuss a topic that I have discussed in part here on the podcast a long, long time ago, but the concept of bulking, some of the myths around that, some things that maybe you're not aware of in terms of what the evidence actually says about calories and bulking and what you should do, what some of the drawbacks of calorie surpluses that maybe seem quite moderate, but actually when you look at the mathematical situation that you're creating and the energy requirements for muscle gain and the leftover, let's say, going towards fat mass, you can gain fat very, very quickly despite feeling like what you're doing is a relatively moderate approach. So, yes, we discussed that. And just quickly, I was made aware that because this is a slightly old podcast, the enrollment dates for Emma New that I discussed were wrong. So anyone who was confused by that, enrollments for MNU for 2024 open on the, I think it's 18th of June. I'm pretty certain it's 18th of June. I've got it written here and I don't know if it's a 3 or an 8. But anyway, yes, it was wrong in that last podcast. So yeah, if you're interested in that. And I will just say at the time of this going out, we're just about to launch the prerequisite course for 2024. So anyone who wants to do the prerequisite course so that they can do MNU this year, you can get in contact with us as usual on mnu@mac-nutrition.com. Anything else for me to say? I think that's everything. I hope you enjoy this podcast. Next podcast coming up is going to be a really good one with some... another seminal paper. It's a little bit of an older seminal paper, but one that I think is worth going into because of lots of the misinformation that's been shouted about in the industry at the minute around insulin and carbohydrates, processed foods, calories. So yes, give you some good understanding. Those of you who are coaches and educators as well, you can take that away to re-educate people on all the misinformation by the big shouty people with large followings. And so I'll see you back for that one. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed this one in the meantime. Much love.
And so I did want to kind of transition here and kind of talk to you about the topic I wanted to bring up today. And this was a podcast I heard you talk about. I think it was maybe like a year ago. I think I've listened to it two or three times the last couple of weeks. So I think it was episode 28 of your podcast. And I thought it was awesome because this is kind of related to some things I've been talking about lately. And it's why women shouldn't bulk. And I know you kind of mentioned that you like in that episode, you wanted to have a title that was kind of attention grabbing, right? And I feel like that definitely, edgy. And I feel like it definitely is that. So if you maybe want to kind of talk about the background of this topic and why you thought it was important, then we can kind of roll from there with it.
Yeah. So the background for it was that I just had a spate of individuals contacting me with much the same message. And I, to this day, still don't know exactly where it came from, but it was, I guess, individuals of a particular demographic, let's say females in and around, let's say 30 to 50, that had been tracking calories, losing weight, et cetera, and hadn't necessarily achieved their goal in terms of body composition, the look that maybe they were striving for, not necessarily the body weight. It was never the body weight. It was more, the look, and maybe some level I wanted to lose this much weight, but either way. And the message that I just kept hearing was, and it was this word that just struck me, bulk. I want to go on a bulk. And it was so, what's the word? It was so alien to me to have, because the people who I see using bulk and hear using bulk are like
guys in their 20s, oh, I'm doing a bulk. It was so alien to me that I had a 40-year-old going, and female going, I want to bulk. And, you know, again, not saying that any woman of 40 shouldn't want to bulk or, and, but the problem is, it's the word bulk, like gain muscle. Okay. Probably wouldn't have stuck out like a sore thumb to me. So I didn't know where they were getting it. And then it was this idea, I want to bulk because I want to gain some muscle, because I think I, for instance, need to gain some muscle to boost my metabolism, or I need to go on a muscle gain phase or on this bulk, or this, you know, or muscle gain phase, so that I can then lose more fat, or so I can look a certain way. Like, I've lost fat, I've lost X kilograms or pounds, but I don't quite look the way. So I think what I need is more muscle so I can look like, and, you know, occasionally people will send you a picture of who they're trying to look like. And, you know, often it's like someone who is using drugs and this person's not, which is always, a bit, you just feel bad pointing it out, right? Like,
yep.
Look, you're never going to look like that. It's, I remember when I first realized that I, without drugs, there was not a hope in hell. Like, you know, nowadays I'd be like, even if I took all the drugs under the sun, I still wouldn't look the way I want to look, because, you know, genetics and muscle insertions and just stuff like that. It's like, you know, Flex Wheeler, who I mentioned earlier, is like one of the most bodybuilding perfect physiques on the planet. Like, there's people who take all the drugs and still don't look anything like him because of the way he's put together. But anyway, having to say to someone like, so I remember when I first found out, and it killed my motivation for training. And so saying to someone like, look, and I don't always jump to the drugs thing. I just go, this person is so lean. It's not the fact they have more muscle than you. It's they're so lean. So male or female, it's like, but in this instance, it was like, oh, you see that bit on her deltoid there, her shoulder, see that line? I don't have that. And I'm like, it's because she's so lean. Not because, like, yeah, she has more muscle than you, but you put on that muscle and you're still going to not be able to see that. You're just going to appear bigger. And so this was the reason for the podcast of, and I think I called it Why Women Shouldn't Bulk. And it ended up not being necessarily specific to women, because it's hard to define the word bulk, but I very often think it's fair to assume that when people talk about bulk, that you're talking about gaining a considerable amount of weight. You're almost, I feel like if you talked about averages, the average meaning of that word, because we don't have a dictionary definition of what that means, but I feel like, and I think most people wouldn't agree with me, you'll take the usual meaning as, we're going to accept a certain level of fat gain along with some muscle gain. Would you tend to agree?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I definitely think when somebody hears bulk, they think, yeah, some weight gain, like a substantial amount of weight gain, with they know that there's going to be some fat gain involved too.
Yeah. And I'm not always sure the women who were messaging me this necessarily were on board with that idea, that they were going to gain some fat. But either way, they were going to up their calories because they were currently dieting, and they were going to go into a muscle gain phase. And I think, you know, I'm going to put on 2 or 3 kilos, and probably assuming that the majority of that would be muscle gain, for instance. And then that was going to dramatically transform their physique. And my message essentially is, when we dial stuff back and we look at realistic rates of muscle gain as one part of our equation, and then number two, what's required for muscle gain, and it still blows my mind that there's people out there going, you can't gain muscle in a deficit, because we know that's categorically incorrect. It's unequivocal that it can happen. I'm not saying it's optimal and I'm not saying it's easy, but it can happen. You know, people go, you can't build a house without bricks, is an incorrect analogy to use, because you can build muscle without exogenous intake of energy above your total daily energy expenditure, which is what we're talking about in a deficit. Like, maybe if you were fasting, you couldn't gain muscle because you're not, but in muscle gain, the bricks are the protein. It's not energy. But you may gain muscle slower and it may be inefficient and this, that, and the other. So on one side of the equation, and you've got loads of research to go, it's suboptimal to try and gain muscle in a deficit. Like we can all agree that, I think. I'm sure someone crazy out there, some carnivore diet guy will come out with something crazy saying that you can or whatever. But, you know, we can all agree it's suboptimal. The discussion becomes, is a calorie surplus more optimal than maintenance? And it may surprise your listeners to hear that we don't have the studies doing, like, it's almost this thing, to gain muscle optimally, you have to be in a surplus. Like, we don't have a study that shows us that unequivocally. We don't have all the studies that we have that have controlled this have looked at the deficits in gaining muscle. And we have other studies of overfeeding, loads of studies in loads of different realms that have looked at lean body mass, but we don't have these studies that where we have comparison groups, like a randomized control trial with one group, you know, with matched protein intakes, and the only significant difference between our groups at the start of the study and the duration of the study that we're controlling for is their energy intake. We don't have those studies. So all we're basing this idea that we need to be in a surplus on is, I guess, conjecture. And I'm still on board with the idea you probably want to try and be in a bit of a surplus. But then you still have this discussion. People will go, well, you know, if I'm training hard, then don't I need more calories? And I'm like, yeah, definitely. How much more training are you going to do a week? Okay, well, I'm going to do an extra bit of training, some more reps, an extra session. I'm going to train extra hard. And I'm like, cool, how many extra calories are those? Is that going to burn? Oh, it's going to burn an extra whatever, let's say 1400 calories a week. It probably won't, but I'm just picking an easy number. And I go, cool, eat 200 calories extra a day. And they're like, oh, so I need to be in a 200 calorie surplus. And I'm like, no, you've just told me you're going to burn 1400 extra. So all I'm doing is providing extra calories to get you back to maintenance because you'd be in a deficit. So when people start to actually, you know, you're not eating maintenance calories for someone who trains not hard. You're eating maintenance calories and I'm not a training specialist in any way, shape, or form. I have a above average knowledge of it, but I'm not, you know, a geek. But as I understand it, one of the big discussions in the training world is this thing of like max recoverable volume. And I don't even know what people debate on this thing. You know, all the debates, let's be honest, most of them are pointless. Everyone kind of mostly agrees on everything. And I remember when there was like the protein debate in the sort of natural bodybuilding world. And there was like this argument whether people needed, it was something absurd. Like, oh, no, I think they need 1.7. And it was like, and the recommendations were like 1.8 to 2.2. But someone was like arguing that it's 1.7. It's like, who cares? Yeah. Like, you're arguing over 0.1. It's absurd. So, but anyway, you've got this thing, max recoverable volume. Cool. Train as hard as you can and continue to recover. Fine. That's where we're starting. Now eat enough calories for that, making sure your protein is set up in the way that we understand probably is necessary for optimal muscle gain. And then you end up at this discussion. Well, okay, any extra calories put us in a calorie surplus. And this is where we get towards this word of bulking. You know, people use the word lean bulk. Some people use the word dirty bulk, which is a bit weird. But this is where we start to teeter with the ratio of muscle gain to fat gain. And, you know, you'll get people going like, you need to be in a 500 calorie surplus. And, you know, again, the energetics of all these things, it's a dynamic system. So you put people in a 1,000 calorie surplus, and some people, like, there's massive genetic differences. And some of that podcast, I based it on the fact that there's the data often or sometimes alludes to the fact that maybe women don't respond as well to excess calories as their male counterparts do. So the difference between two individuals of like feeding 10,000 an extra 1,000 calories a day is like a tenfold difference in the amount of fat that they'll gain. So it's huge. And then the data, and again, there's not loads of studies, but it would seemingly suggest that maybe, and for instance, there's a study, the guy who does all the NEAT research, Levine, he does loads of the non-exercise activity thermogenesis stuff. All of the female subjects, and I think it was a small study, maybe, you know, less than 20 people, but all of the female subjects were the ones whose NEAT increased by the least amount, and all subjects were trying to be overfed by 1,000 calories. So, and again, I can't remember the study, but again, I think I talked about this in my podcast. The older females, older women, maybe adapting less. So for instance, in this 1,000 calorie surplus, some individuals, non-exercise activity thermogenesis, so we're just talking about wasted energy, really, to put it super simply, just an increase in all different random things like fidgeting, and just anything that's not planned exercise really comes under this hugely broad banner of NEAT, which I don't like, but that's a different story. But like 5 to 600 extra calories, some individuals would be lost with regards to NEAT for some of these individuals, which is a huge amount. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people just hardly any of the calories going to be wasted and dissipated as heat and that, those kind of things. They're just all being stored. So there is a big inter-individual variation, you know, in what we're discussing here. And so people, you know, some people, oh, I added in 500 calories and I didn't really gain much fat. Cool, you know, for you, brilliant. And that's my message is, one, you should just monitor. Like, but two, ask yourself, am I willing to get more fat? And for these types of individuals who are contacting me, they within, you know, a few paragraphs, it was quite clear of conversation. It was quite clear to me they had no intention or had no interest in gaining any fat. They did not want to do that. That was, you know, their sole goal was being in a smaller body. And so I said to them, like, forget bulking. Bulking is not what you're after here. Like, maybe just get yourself out of a deficit for a bit. If progress has slowed massively and you're not really enjoying what you're doing, get yourself out of a deficit, jump back up to what would be your current maintenance calories. You know, look to get your calories towards what would be your predicted maintenance calories for your age, body weight, body fat, whatever equation you're going to use. And try and maximize your training volume. Try and train really well. Get your protein to a good level. Like, you can try and build some muscle in that time if you want. You probably will gain some lean body mass. We're not necessarily talking about myofibrillar proteins that you'll be gaining, but you may, you know, lean body mass comes in many different forms, not least of all, you know, muscle glycogen, etc. So do that for a bit. Cool. Gain some muscle for a bit. Give yourself a, you know, if you've got dieting fatigue, give yourself, you know, more nutrients, you know, eat more foods, more variety of foods you maybe haven't been able to while you've been restricting, and then reassess. Because what you're telling me is you want to have XYZ definition, and that definition is going to come from fat loss, not gaining loads of muscle. You'd need to gain an inordinate amount of muscle to push through your fat to give you this curve that you've seen on someone on a picture that's probably not even got that curve. It's a filter and Photoshop. And don't take yourself further away from your goal by, you know, quote unquote, bulking.
Yeah, no, I love all those suggestions. And kind of like you mentioned, I think the big thing is like just getting out of a deficit for a period of time, I think is so important for these people. And I also, you know, I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts on this, but I think it comes down to like a lot of these people too, they've just been like dieting for like fat loss for so long. And the way that they go about like their training and stuff like that too, is kind of like counterintuitive to putting on muscle as well. Right. So you kind of get this recipe of like, you keep doing that and like, you just don't have this look that you're going far, but it's also because of the way that you're like, I think maybe these people are just very focused on like seeing the scale weight go down. And for them, anything outside of that is very scary. But what I like about this is like, essentially the big things, the big takeaways that I got from it was, at the very least, you know, just maybe there's probably a lot of benefit to you getting out of a deficit for a period of time, especially if you've been doing that for a while. And then, you know, before you decide to just add in all these extra calories, like work on your sleep, you know, maybe improve your training a little bit, like, you know, get a little bit more nutrients. Don't be like focused on seeing the scale go down. And that essentially is kind of what you need to do first before you decide, hey, you know what, I need to build muscle. So now I'm going to go into this big bulk. Cause I feel like people think it's either or. It's like, hey, I either need to be dieting for fat loss or I either need to be building muscle. It's like, you don't necessarily have to go either way, like with that. Right. And I like that on the podcast, you brought up fat loss is energy dependent, whereas like muscle growth is more like signal dependent. And that's cool because that shows you that you don't necessarily have to just like force feed yourself to build muscle.
Yeah. And it's cool that you bring that up actually, because it is another area that I maybe don't tend towards talking about instantly, but it's, you know, once you have done this for a bit, you want to be eating for fat loss and training for muscle gain. It's, I think you kind of alluded to it there, that sometimes people can start training for fat loss, and whether, you know, what that means to them, toning exercises or doing super high volume of training, or I'm going to do circuits, which, you know, these things won't necessarily lead to the types of physiques that maybe they're, or at least definitely not the ones that they're sending me that they want to look like. They need to be fueling training and training in a much more intelligent way for their goals, specifically for their goals of, you know, not doing circuit training or whatever, and actually doing muscle building type training. And I didn't really go into some of the stuff, but you're right. Even sleep wise, going back to somewhere around maintenance, maybe it does improve their sleep. It very often does if they've just been on this constant hamster wheel of fat loss, and, you know, they go back to maintenance, you know, almost certainly improve nutrient intake, often getting yourself out of an energy deficit, improve sleep. And getting out of an energy deficit, like I mentioned, is super suboptimal for muscle gain. And that is due to this plethora of effects it has on various different hormones. So this whole like well-studied area of relative energy deficiency, you know, previously it was like the female athlete triad, but it became a bit more inclusive because it, you know, obviously includes males as well. But all of, you know, thyroid being suppressed, testosterone being lower, you know, all these different things that are going to improve when you go back up to maintenance calories. Again, staying away from discussion of necessarily a surplus of calories, but yeah, off the dieting bandwagon, get training better, benefit from all these things. You know, after 2 weeks of a diet break, whatever, of just eating, you know, at maintenance calories, we do get a recovery of some of the suppression of energy expenditure. So, you know, a suppression of, you know, not that non-exercise activity thermogenesis is lower or gets lowered when we're dieting. So we regain some of that, whether or not that puts us in a long-term better position is again a different discussion, but at least we start back from square one and then we can, when appropriate or when we want to, jump back into a deficit if needed, if wanted. And, you know, you can make progress again with, you know, from a different, you know, a leaner but different starting point of, actually, I've got my metabolism back a teeny bit. My training is going really well at the minute. My sleep's better. I've had a higher intake of various micro and macronutrients for a while. It's all one big interplay.
Yeah. And I mean, you get more food too, which, I mean, that's awesome too, right? Like that flexibility is nice. That gets you to not stress about that. But like you said, though, it is like maintenance is very, there's a lot of inter-individual variability there with that, because like you said, what the big thing I took from that too, is like, it seems like based on the small research from what you said, is that women tend to not upregulate their NEAT or things like that when they are in a surplus. And when you brought it up on the podcast, you kind of talked about from like evolutionary biology, I think is what it was. It's like, it kind of makes sense, right? Like they basically, for female, with those extra calories, like they're going to use that towards like reproduction essentially, right? Where it's like, hey, you got to make sure you have enough energy coming in for that. And I imagine that females probably store body fat a little bit more than males do in general.
Yeah. And this is the thing as well, is it's not to say that there isn't huge variation between the individual sexes as well. Like some men will have a high propensity for fat gain, and but in general, yeah, we have women seemingly protect body fat stores to a greater extent. You know, the animal models, I'm not a big fan of animal research at all, but occasionally I find my like a guilty pleasure going and having a bit of a look, because you just get such more profound results and sometimes quite interesting results. But you know, in the animal research, you compare like rodent models of energy restriction, and you starve essentially male and female rodents, and the male rodents just get super lean and their appetite goes crazy and they are super super hungry. So then you put food back in the equation and they gorge and they gain the body weight, whereas the female animals just kind of stop moving, and their appetite doesn't change in the same way that the males do. And then, so, which almost, I don't like people using logic ever with these very complex, you know, human beings and even just mammals or just organisms in general. But it's what we kind of see quite often with clients, is just like, you know, starving female clients, they move less, it's not a great idea. And you know, male clients, male bodybuilders, natural bodybuilders I've worked with, or you know, myself when I was competing, it's like, yeah, you get lean and your hunger goes absolutely crazy through the roof, and you know, as soon as you put food back in, you recover that body weight back. But yes, so it's just this case of there will be individual variation. So some women will be able to add calories and they will move around more and they will waste some of those calories, and they will be able to do a bit like the discussions around reverse dieting. And very often, lots of the discussions around reverse dieting, someone said to me the other day, you know, look at this, look at what this person's saying. They say, you know, they're eating 2000 calories and then they started reverse dieting and got themselves out of a deficit, and they added all these calories back in, and now they're maintaining on 2,800 calories. And I'm like, look at their training, and you know, all that's happening is they're just training more, and they're just absolutely beasting it in the gym. I can't remember if they were CrossFitter or something. And when you've got high energy output, you know, which isn't just neat. It's not like this, like a normal non-CrossFit freak. It's just a normal human being. They don't just burn loads of extra calories. They don't just randomly start fidgeting and walking more. Like if they've got a desk job, they might fidget a teeny bit more, but it's not burning loads of extra calories. So any athletes I've worked with, yeah, often you increase calories in their diet, and you know, training quality just improves massively, which burns more calories. So they're able to do that. And just as an aside, there's a, is Mike Dolce is his name. I think it's him. One of these nutrition kind of gurus, and not in a good way, for kind of MMA type athletes, combat athletes, but essentially going like, yeah, what we do is we change their diet and we get them eating 6 meals a day to boost their metabolism. And they're on a training camp and they go from 2000 calories to 3000 calories a day. But look, they're losing all this body fat. But then this guy, he's literally joined a training camp prior to a big fight. And he's gone from training like 1 hour a day to 6 hours a day. And it's like, well, duh. It's like, you haven't done anything magical. All of the research shows that you're an idiot and don't know what you're talking about, because we know that whether someone eats once or 13 times a day, it doesn't change their metabolism. And that's via the absolute gold standard, doubly labeled watered methods. Like, no one's arguing that point with any intelligence. But yeah, like, if someone's training volume and training quality and everything goes up with more calories, yeah, they can maintain on a high number of energy intake, but it's just their output's gone up a boatload.
That's really good. And right, yeah, that's not that 6 meals is better. It's just, hey, they're training way more, so their energy expenditure is yeah, way up. It's crazy. You definitely have to be careful in today's world with the internet in terms of where you get your information from. But that stuff's easier to promote, I feel like, than actual science-backed stuff. So
it really is.
Awesome, Martin. I feel like we summed that up pretty well. Was there any other, like, maybe take home points there that you would like to share with the audience, like on this topic specifically?
On the bulking topic?
Yes, sir.
I don't think so. I think we've, unless you think there's anything I've missed, I feel like it's been a good summary for people. And I suppose for people just saying, yes, we've focused a bit on females there, but lots of the same applies for males. Like, it is a common issue that people gain a lot of weight, think that they're gaining a lot of muscle because their shirt's tighter in places they want it to be tighter, on the arms, on their chest, whatever. And they think, oh, look at all this muscle I'm gaining. And they still metrics that they use to define their leanness, like bicep vein or whatever, abs. I remember the first ever DEXA I had done, I was 23% body fat and I'd been bulking, but I have a very lean, naturally lean midsection, particularly around my sort of serratus and obliques. So I, in a side shot, it's like, geez, you're shredded, you've got visible obliques. And I have a very unique, I guess, fat distribution and where I hold my adipose tissue. So it's just worth bearing in mind that because what happens is then they diet down and they've only gained 1-2 whatever pounds of muscle. And they're like, oh man, I must be dieting wrong. I'm losing all the muscle that I gain on my bulks. Until you just take a step back and look at realistic rates of muscle gain and you just go, God, this bulking thing is not all it's cracked up to be. Like, you're just gaining loads of fat and coming back to where, let's say you do 6 months bulk, 6 months diet, and you gain whatever. Let's go small. You gain 12 pounds in the 6 months. People gain way more than this, and then they lose 11, or let's say they diet down 10 pounds. It's like, look, over a year, I gained 2 pounds. Oh, and they're upset. And versus this guy who just gains, just eats at maintenance, give or take. And at the end of the year, he's 2 pounds heavier, but the same body fat, and he's gained 2 pounds of muscle. Like, that's not too far from the truth. That's not too far from what the realistic situation would happen. And so it just, do what you want to do. Bulking can be fun. It's nice sometimes, but we're talking about males and females here. Bulking hard, definitely, I just would really just recommend against. It's outdated.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that, you know, telling people, like, just being honest with them, being like, muscle growth is such a slow process. And I don't think people can comprehend that. So they think that by eating more and whatnot, like, that weight that they're gaining is more muscle. It's like, you can't really cheat the system. Like you said earlier, right? It's not energy dependent, like fat loss is, right? And so I think people aren't patient with it, and they think that they can make this process go faster by just eating more. But it's like, you have to be careful with that, because like you said, you get in that situation where you gain a bunch of body fat, and then at the end of the day, it's like, you're just kind of, when your fat loss phase, you're just kind of working on getting rid of all that body fat that you gained for not much muscle.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Martin, I appreciate your time. I want to be respectful of your time. We've been at this for a little over an hour now. So before I let you go, though, is there anywhere where you would like the audience to find you? And I know you mentioned they can also email about Mac University as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think if people want to find me, I'm always, you know, Facebook and Instagram, Martin Nutrition. They can find me there. I'm very active. I do my very best. It's not entirely possible to kind of respond to DMs, but I do question boxes and stuff that people can use to get my attention. And then I've got my website, martin-macdonald.com, which has all of, you know, my podcast episodes on there. And I go to the extent of posting all of the references from studies I mentioned and stuff. But, you know, I feel like I work quite hard on it. And then, yeah, mac-nutritionuni.com is the one if anyone wants to, you know, take their nutrition knowledge, get a new qualification that is, you know, quickly becoming, I guess, the gold standard in the health and fitness industry, and go on the website, read up on it, contact us if you need any questions answering, and we'll do our best to help you out.
Awesome. Yeah. And also I'll link the episode 28 of the podcast as well, of your podcast. Cool. So people can check out that that episode if they want to kind of get like just your thoughts on it and probably a little bit more in-depth detail on it. So again, Martin, appreciate your time, and we will chat with you soon.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me.